So if someone asks you, like, what, you know, kind of give me the vibe of American Beauty by the Grateful Dead, just tell them, oh, when they say mama, they mean their girlfriend. You're all caught up.
Welcome to Tune Change,
a show where two music jerks try to give albums a chance.
You know, when we started this podcast, we knew that there were going to be lots of artists that, you know, we changed our minds about, or changed our tunes about, even perhaps. But there are other times where we figured that we would get about what we expected. We're trucking just like the Doodah Man on this episode. It's a hand-me-down. It's a box of rain. Joining me is my good friend, Brett. Brett, how have you been?
Fine. I've been fine. How are you?
Fine as well. Well, today, I mentioned, we're joining some friends of the devil in talking about American Beauty by the Grateful Dead. Last episode, we decided that we wanted to do a country record, and this was the best one that we could think of that kind of fit the brief, as it were. And obviously, it's a well-regarded record. Brett, did you know of this record? Surely you had heard of it, but
should we just back up and talk about like awareness of the Grateful Dead generally?
I think that's
almost more important than the particular record in this case, because it's just like we knew we had to do a Grateful Dead record, and it's like, well, we got to pick one. And it's like, well, they're not really known for records, right?
Oh,
they have a they're not their main thing.
Yeah,
so. You know, you pick this one. I guess it's like this or Working Man's Dead. Those are the only two I had heard of.
Likewise.
But, yeah. But I was aware of the Grateful Dead, of course. My oldest brother is actually into, like, kind of jammier, sort of bluesier things. So he's never, like, a super huge Grateful Dead person. That's right. That's the term, Grateful Dead. For someone who really likes the Grateful Dead. They're called Grateful Dead people. So he wasn't super into them, but he liked jammy stuff. So I was like aware of them, and I'd heard Truckin' a bunch, which is basically why I suggested American Beauty, is because it's the one with Truckin' on it.
If you've heard a Grateful Dead song, there's a very decent chance that it's Trucking. I think,
and
that
if it's, was... I'm sorry. Ding, 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 ding. Matt adds too much to the title. Once again, it is Trucking, my friend. No one is trucking anything. This is not trucking. This is not an industry. There's nothing industrious about this. It's Trucking.
No gerunds allowed.
It was this or Touch of Grey are the two Grateful Dead songs you've heard.
Oh, that's true.
Heard two Grateful Dead songs.
Grateful Dead for me, and you know, this album in particular, and I've not... Yeah, I was looking over their discography, and Working Man's Dead is the other album that I'd heard of. It came out like 4 months before this record.
Another theme we should talk about is, like, just like Deep Purple, they're like, I think we're discovering that all these, like, you know, dad rock boomer bands are like, they were just overworked. No one could have this many ideas. They were making albums every four fucking months. It's too much. Like, of course, again, this is, I think, another, of course they've got nothing to say.
Lyrical content is definitely.
And don't they like hire a guy just to write lyrics? Am I mistaken about that? Don't they have a guy and that's like his whole job?
Yes, there is a lyricist. His name is Robert Hunter. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't remember if this was off mic, but Pigpen, Ron McKernan wrote the lyrics to Operator on this record. But
thank you for your gift, sir.
I'd heard of them. I'd certainly heard Touch of Grey. I think my first, you know, kind of even childhood awareness, you know, other than maybe hearing Truckin' on the radio, my parents weren't into the Grateful Dead, so I didn't really, you know, pick it up as a kid.
That's for the best. Just like if you're making a scatter chart, right? The like kids whose parents were really into the Grateful Dead, I think probably generally had worse childhoods than the people whose parents were not super into the Grateful Dead.
Well, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. You know, amongst my initial awareness, you know, one of the first times I'd heard about the Dead was. I was going to a birthday party for a neighbor, and we were like, well, what should we get so-and-so? And I said, well, what about a hacky sack? Because there was a, you know, so I was, you know, fourth, fifth grade. So, knew a kid with a hacky sack and thought, well, maybe this other kid would want a hacky sack. And so we went to the local,
it all seems so reasonable in hindsight.
We went to the local head shop that we may or may not have known was a head shop at the time, but my mom and I, you know, some Saturday afternoon, pull up to Cosmic Fish, because I knew that I had heard that that's where my other friend had gotten the hacky sack was Cosmic Fish. So
I heard you guys got hacky sacks.
We got all the hacky sacks you need. And unsurprisingly, there were some hacky sacks with the Grateful Dead bear on them, and my mom picked it up and asked the clerk, "Oh, is this a teddy bear?" And the clerk said, "Well, no, that's a Grateful Dead bear." So, you know, smash cut. That was probably the first time I'd heard of Grateful Dead, and it was probably right around the time that that Jerry Garcia died. Remember hearing about Jerry Garcia dying and one of those strange sense memories that you have, just catching something on the news. But, and then, you know, in high school, I then kind of absorbed the fact that they were a jam band and kind of the granddaddy of the jam bands, had heard,
Matt,
you know,
what is a jam band?
Well, I mean, we can go ahead and get into it, because all of the songs on this record, I'm trying to imagine them jamming on these songs, and I'm kind of coming up empty, and maybe this isn't representative of, you know, of their other psychedelic work.
I was like, is this representative of their work? It sounds like neither of us cared to venture further into the 70s.
One thing I did do is I knew that they were known to be a live band. You know, it's always like, not only just, oh, you got to go see them live. It really makes sense when you go see them live. But like, there are, you know, a big bootleg community, and there are people who, oh no, man, the 72 show was the show to see. And you know, I went out and listened to a few live tracks just of stuff off of this record, and it just sounded like this record, but just maybe not quite as good. Here's the thing. It's okay to like a band or a record or whatever. And I know that there are lots of people who have, you know, very positive feelings about the Dead and, you know, mean so much to them. And, you know,
yeah. And I think we're getting to the, like, you know, everything we say, it should be prefaced with, well, what I think is, it's just, you know, it's fucking exhausting to talk like that. So we're not gonna.
Yes.
We're gonna say things like, hey, I don't think this album is very well performed, and they should have maybe taken a few more stabs at it, but I understand why they didn't, because they had been on tour for the last 8 months and recorded two albums at the same time. So I get it, but like, it sounds sloppy a bunch, right?
Oh, like, yes.
There's sloppy sections of this, and not in a like a fun punk rock kind of way. Like, it's not supposed to be, but it is.
Well, and, you know, it's sloppy and not in the way that is charming, I think.
Because it's slow and sloppy.
That's slow and sloppy. Problem. You know, you're right.
You gotta be fast and sloppy.
I think the song that least exemplifies this is the first song, which is my favorite song on the record. It's Box of Rain. And it was one of the only ones that wasn't sung by Jerry Garcia, or, you know, there were a couple of Bob Weir songs. It's Phil Lesh. And I think this is a strong song. Like, I'm hot and cold on this record. There's probably three songs where I'm like, you know, you kind of got something there.
Yeah, I'll say it starts, you know, if we stayed kind of lean into the country a little bit, like, and more consistently, I think I would have liked it better. It's like, it kind of, most of the record, I feel like, lands in this weird in-between space. In between, it's like, there are times when it almost sounds like a, like, really early Who song, but just,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
not played very well. And then there's songs where it sounds like, oh, hey, this is like a song Graham Parsons threw away. And those right. are the times where it's the best, but, like, I don't think it ever quite rises above the, like, oh, Graham Parsons would have thrown this away, but they used it. So Graham Parsons is going to come up a lot, because I'm fascinated by, I like everything he ever did, and I think that's what they're trying to do, and it's not very good.
Yeah.
I don't think, in my opinion, is that it's not very good.
It's funny that you mentioned Graham Parsons, and also that you mentioned that this doesn't fit anywhere that you would, it's always kind of off.
That's the
off
point,
balance,
man.
Well, right, yeah,
man,
I know.
And that's the man.
But
one way to describe this record is, so if someone asks you, like, what, you know, kind of give me the vibe of American Beauty by the Grateful Dead, just tell them, oh, when they say mama, they mean their girlfriend. You're all caught up.
Operator, can you hear?
If you told me, like, oh, these lyrics were written by just, like, whoever wrote the guitar part. It was just like, whoever wrote the song wrote the lyrics, or whoever
right.
singing it wrote
right.
the lyrics. I would totally believe you. There's no kind of, like, didn't have a point of view other than, like, whatever, man. And, like, that's it. It's all just, like, every song is, like, I got up on this day, and it was a day like any other day. And I was like, man, what a day. And then we went home. Then nothing happens in any of these songs unless it's like, man, that woman, she was a woman.
Is it just a box of rain? I don't know who put it there. Need it if you need it, or need it if you dare.
Can I? They're the Everly Strangers. They're terrible at harmonizing with each other. I think it sounds bad. When they differentiate the harmonies,
yeah, at a bigger interval, you know, they're going to blend better than if they're, you know, if they're a lot closer.
Yeah.
At the very end, they bring in the high harmony, and all of a sudden, it's a cereal commercial to me. Just a box of rain.
Well, this is the Grateful Dead. They're the most marketed fucking thing in the music business, so it probably was a fucking cereal commercial.
Saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac.
I think that's, I don't know, that's where a lot of my animosity towards the Grateful Dead came from. It's just like, you're selling fucking lighters and all this, like, it's just, I don't know. I just find it repugnant. And so I didn't want to give their music a chance. And I'm sure that's coloring how I'm thinking of it now, but not nearly as much. Like, it doesn't make me mad that Kiss sells wallets. When I was like 15, it made me mad, which is bananas. It's not a good way to live your life, but it pissed me off. If a band that I kind of liked was in a commercial, it made me mad. Like when the Buzzcocks were in a car commercial, pissed me off. And that definitely made me steer way clear of this kind of.
But also, as I understand it, like cover bands are part of the culture. So I think it was the first time that I ever heard Friend of the Devil is a Friend of Mine, Friend of the Devil, just that.
Once, ding!
Ding!
Ding, 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 ding.
About 9 years ago, I went on a date and, it was like a second or third date or something. And this person wanted to go to, it was at a club downtown. I think it was Vantage. I forget. It may or may not have been the building where the owner got killed, a couple years later in some kind of shady possible drug deal. But
Friend of the Devil, indeed.
Were you ever aware of the Schwag?
So, like, why don't you go ahead and tell me what the Schwag is so I can be disgusted by it all over again?
I don't know how regional they were. They were a regional Grateful Dead cover band. Yeah,
that's why it was ringing bells, because they played all the time at like Sedalia. Hooray. Well, let's all drive to Sedalia.
They were playing downtown Springfield, and it was the 20th anniversary show for this Grateful Dead cover band. And I just remember thinking like, huh? I mean, I guess that's one way to do it, but
you know what? If you actually dig that music, and the Grateful Dead have like, they covered so many songs and like played things so many different ways that it's not like you're locked into one particular thing or the other.
That's true.
You know, if you liked that music, I could see that being a pretty sweet life.
And they kind of, you mentioned that there's a lot of variation in how they play. They're very, I hesitate to even make the comparison, but they're very Dylan-esque in that way, just in that they, have lots and lots of interpretation.
in that they have contempt for their audience and their audience doesn't mind. They are very similar in that way. And they're both Nobel Prize winning poets, right? Robert Hunter and Robert Zimmerman. They're both Nobel Prize winning.
Yeah. Each one. They're one and one. How do you feel about Mandolin? We mentioned briefly Friend of the Devil. Mandolin figures prominently in Friend of the Devil.
What I think it's actually pretty good at is like as a like main melodic element, playing like a run, I think works better than the like jangly chord, which I don't care for as much. So I can like it in certain ways or certain contexts, but I'll say that I've never thought a song was missing a mandolin.
I think that you make the important or the critical distinction is, you're either doing noodles or you're playing crispy chords, very, very high, crispy chords. And I think, Friend of the Devil is another song that I don't hate.
I think it's one of,
I'll bop along.
One of the high points of the record. That's not saying a whole lot, but I think it's the most, outside of Truckin', it's the most song-like of all the songs. It's got a, like, one of the things. So a lot of these songs feel to me like they're like, they're hopping around the scale, and then they just like wind up on some note to resolve on, and they're like, it's cool, man, we'll just hang out here. And like they just keep like, nah, whatever, dude, like this, any root note will do, man, the sun will come up tomorrow, man, it'll just be another day, man. We'll look around and be like, what a day, man. God damn it. I'm being super hateful on this one. And it's hyperbolic. And it's against kind of the spirit of what we're doing. But I hated this. I had no fun at all listening to this record. Truckin' is such a breath of fresh air when you finally get to it. If you're listening to this record straight through and you finally get to Truckin', you're like, oh my God. It's like you found water after several days without water.
My first
but
note
friend
on
friend of the devil, friend of the devil, I can stand.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, if this was, and friend of the devil is in the category of like, well, if Phil Oakes was singing over the top of it, I'd think it was real good.
That's
it's like the, you know, the lyrics don't do anything for me. It's. So no song called Friend of the Devil has any right to be this kind of laid back. That's such a badass song title. to just waste it. And waste it early. This is 1970. We just like spin it. We just invented distortion pedals and we already used Friend of the Devil. Thanks a lot, Jerry Garcia. Sit out one, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight. Just might get some sleep tonight. Ran into the devil, baby, lonely 20 bills. You were mentioning, you know, kind of jumping all over the scale and just, you know, falling where you may. I think that really typifies Sugar Magnolia. I know that they've got a lot of flower song titles and imagery, and evidently American Beauty is a type of rose, which kind of makes sense with the album cover. Yeah, Sugar Magnolia. This is the one that's like
Sugar Magnolia.
Yeah. Blossoms blooming, heads all empty, and I don't care. So my baby down by the river knew she'd have to come up soon for air.
Yeah.
Sweet blossom, come on under the willow. We can have high times if you abide. We can discover the wonders of nature, rolling in the rushes down by the riverside.
There's not a real sense of direction in the melody and in the chords, and it's kind of one where the verse and the chorus, they sound different, just different enough to be to qualify as that's the verse and that's the chorus. But you know, if you were to drop in, you know, just at a random point, it would be tough to identify, you know, which is what. My note is flaccid. Crosby, Stills, and Nash were definitely on the scene, you know, kind of hanging out. I had a note that, folks had compared, and again, this is coming from the Wikipedia, so, internet ticker, it has been said that, people have compared their vocal style to Crosby, Stills, and Nash, which I think is they're stylistically true, however, in effect, not so much. I've got a note.
I hate David Crosby. He would be the best singer in the Grateful Dead by so much,
without a question.
It's not even fair, and he's the worst part of everything he's ever been in. So let's go back. So Sugar Magnolia is one of the ones that gives me like first Who album vibes. And like,
yes.
This is like what those early Who songs would sound like if the drummer sucked.
Right.
Which is really, really not very good.
He's kind of just got the one, the one little he's got one fill, and he's, you know, he's kind of trying to do more of like a circular, you know, jazz, you know, Mitch Mitchell, Keith Moon kind of thing, but he doesn't have the same chops, so it just kind of sounds pretty samey.
A lot of these songs are just everybody's finger picking, and like everybody shouldn't be finger picking. You got to be a lot more cohesive than this to do that. And like somebody's got to do something simple.
Everybody's got ideas. Yeah.
You know, I listened to Side by Side today, some Flying Burrito Brothers and Grateful Dead. I'm like, why do I love this and I hate this? And part of it is like everybody's kind of in their own fucking lane. Like there's a sad violin and it's all sad. All of it is sad. There's no happy Flying Burrito Brothers songs. Everybody is dying all the time. they also use the stereo field in a rational way. And the Grateful Dead will just like, hey, the kick drum's on the left, man. Whatever, dude.
Can I tell you something? I'm glad that you mentioned the stereo field, because yeah, it's all over the place, and evidently this was remixed in like 5.1 Dolby, which is just like, of course it is, because it's.
Okay, everybody go to your separate speaker. Everybody go to your separate speaker and play your separate song separately.
So you can see all the seams, or hear all the seams in this case. Quick note on Operator. This is the one by Pigpen. I would much rather listen to the Jim Croce tune, though this did precede it. But this reminded me more of it's almost like a Roger Miller kind of gimmicky song.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I don't like it very much. Every once in a while, the bass tone is really good and really noticeably good. Like the kind of plucky kind of 60s bass tone. I always kind of like that.
Yeah.
But like some of the songs are kind of like the bass is nowhere to be found. They're just very kind of tinny to me, almost. The drums especially sound pretty paper thin.
And I think that's to the detriment of, you know, pairing that weak, you know, tone with just lots of kind of I'll drop in a few of those rolls that I'm talking about, but
I mean, yeah, this sounds like the kind of record that like you and I, with enough practice, could figure out how to play well enough to play on this record. Like, it's not outside our capability to play these parts.
Yeah.
And like this well. But yeah. That's not a compliment.
Yes.
Like, we could have a tremendous amount of practice, and it would be like, we would play the stuff in the right order, right? But we would probably not have very good feel or really be in the pocket or able to, like, respond to the band and, like, change tempo intentionally and not unintentionally.
Right.
Like, we aren't good enough to do that, and neither is this dude, and that's the problem.
Well... And then they slow it down. Candyman's coming along.
Slow it away. And when they slow it down, they slow it all the way down to a crawl.
They're crashing now.
Look out, the Candyman. Here he comes, he's gone.
This record is so, and I can't possibly be the first person to make this observation. This record is so like listening to a drunk or stoned person tell you a story. It takes forever. These run-on sentences. And
what's going to happen when the Candyman gets here? I know he's coming. You've told me he's coming several times.
He's gonna... I still don't know. this album also has the most deflating, like, oh, there's another verse. Fuck.
Yeah.
Like, they will all the time do, like, solo kind of instrumental section into the chorus, and you're like, all right, we're wrapping it up. And then the verse comes back, and it's just crushing.
Yeah, several times I noticed, like, did this song need this extra, you know, 90 seconds to 2 minutes? Candyman 6:14. If you're going to make country ballads and, you know, Americana, you know, there's a reason that all those Hank Williams songs are like a minute 50. Or
he was just a dude in a room. Just a dude. And had about the same drum tone, which is, again, not a compliment, because they stuck a fucking microphone in the middle of the room and just said, nah, play the drums.
Well, it's been a while since I've watched it, and I wasn't able to find it. But a while back, I got from the library, they had those classic album DVDs that, you know, you'd see them in music stores sometimes too. And American Beauty had one, and I think friend of the show Josh and I watched it one time, and they were interviewing the guys, and sidebar, I think the annoyance with Grateful Dead is directly in direct proportion to the seriousness with which people talk about the Grateful Dead, especially members of the Grateful Dead. It's like, oh, you know, it was all happening, man. And it's like, None of this warrants this degree of seriousness, but they were talking about, oh, well, you know, we hated, you know, engineers hated working with us. We wanted to get the sound of heavy air in a room. And it's like, I mean, well, you failed.
Engineers hated working with you because you were asking them to do impossible hippie nonsense shit instead of their job. Yeah.
I feel like we're piling on, but just there's a lot here, folks. Dear listener, wherever you are, there's a lot here. We listen for, you know, find out for yourself, check it out. It's, you know, pitch many, many well-respected music outlets have given this record, a perfect score, 10 out of 10, but, we are not that
couldn't
music
get
outlet
any better. No way to improve it. American Beauty.
Ripple. The mandolin's back.
God, what? We always do this. We're always like, we don't have to go song by song. And then we go song by song. And I was fucking looking forward to not going song by song this time.
I think let's dispense of the middle part of the second half of American Beauty right now. My note on all of these is this is like the Grateful Dead version of those filler songs that were on like the second half of the Doors self-titled before the end. It's just, it's just potato chips. It's
yeah. Boy, they sure have written two albums in 4 months.
Yeah. Listen to the second half, for paperwork's sake, we've got Broke Down Palace, we've got Till the Morning Comes, which is disappointingly not a cover of the Neil Young track on After the Gold Rush. And then finally, Addicts of My Life. I think of the three, that was the one that I liked the most. But, you know, again, it's another kind of the drugs are wearing off kind of song.
But not in a good way. Did you look closely at the track list, like on Wikipedia? because I would like to play a game called Which Ones Have Their Own Wikipedia Page and Which Don't. It's a game.
I've taken off of that page, but I did have the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Open,
well, so it, scramble your brains up.
Okay. All right.
And we'll do this anyway. So 1, 2, 3. So half of the songs have Wikipedia pages. I think you got to get them all right to win. I think it's like,
all right,
I think no wrong answer. I think one wrong answer and you're done, because I think you should be able to get them all.
Okay. All right. We're going for one. There's a total of five?
Yeah. Okay. Half of the songs have their own Wikipedia page.
Truckin' is going to have its own Wikipedia page.
Clearly.
I believe that Ripple is going to have a Wikipedia page.
Yes.
I believe that Box of Rain is going to have a Wikipedia page.
Yes.
From there, I probably Friend of the Devil.
That's the last one that I feel like you ought to get. Now we're on to the hardest one. There are six remaining. One of them links to a Wikipedia page. Which is it?
Shit. This is how in and out this record is, because I'm I'm having to work for song titles. Is it? Oh, it's Sugar Magnolia.
That is correct. Hold it out.
Sugar Magnolia is one that I hear people talk about it for some reason. But
I don't. Hey, it's not for me. Yeah, I was never once in the mood to listen to this record. Which is one of the things I feel kind of bad. Like, okay, I had like an ad hoc challenge of which ones have Wikipedia pages, but the challenge I actually thought of is because I knew I was going to be pretty hyperbolically angry about the Grateful Dead in a way that, like, look, here's the thing. I'm probably never going to think about the Grateful Dead in a serious way ever again for the rest of my life. It's fine for the Grateful Dead to do whatever they want, but I've been fairly hateful, so I think we should both say three nice things about the Grateful Dead, and at least one of them has to be... No, two of them have to be about American Beauty in particular. One can be a wild card. Well, I appreciate the Grateful Dead. Do X.
I think that the piano playing on this record, and I know that they had a couple of different piano players... I think of all of the instruments, it was probably my favorite. I like the piano on this record.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the Grateful Dead not giving a shit about their fans bootlegging things. That's nice. It's good that they did that.
That is legit rad. I will definitely grant that. And you know, we were talking about merchandising earlier, and you know, you're always rooting for artists to make a living, whether they're in the Grateful Dead or whether they're in a Grateful Dead cover band. You know, if you're going out there and making money as a musician, most of the time I'm gonna feel good about that.
Most bands bleed their fans. Most artists do. Like, tickets are wildly expensive. But most of them also don't have, like, a cult. So, like, when a band that kind of has a cult is also kind of bleeding their fans, it feels a little different from a kind of a ethical perspective.
Yeah, nobody...
Like, they know they've inspired this level of devotion. And I think it's a... Look, I don't think the Grateful Dead were, like, horrible people. But I don't think, you know, it's a hard line to walk. And I think actually the band that walks it the best is unpopular opinion, I think it's the Insane Clown Posse.
I don't think
they merchandise themselves all that much, and they give shit away to their fans.
And that's an interesting comparison, because yeah, I think that's a natural kind of successor of that kind of fandom. You know, wildly different stylistically, but yeah, I think that's pretty astute. That like yeah, that the devotion, the lifestyle, you know, is, you know, it's a natural kind of progression.
On the scale from Insane Clown Posse level, cool about it, not bleeding their fans, to on the other end of the spectrum, Kiss, business monsters, would literally eat you if it made them $10.
Right.
I think the Grateful Dead are more like the Insane Clown Posse.
Oh, yes.
Then Kiss. Because I think also, here's the thing about the Grateful Dead. They're mostly selling that shit to rubes. They're not selling it to deadheads. They're selling it to, like, you know, like, oh, I went to a Grateful Dead concert once. That's who that shit's for.
Right.
Most of the cats that you meet on the streets speak of true love. Most of the time they're sitting and crying at home. One of these days, they know they gotta get going. Out of the door and down to the street all alone. Chugging like the Duda man once told me, you got to play your hand. Sometimes the cards ain't worth a dime.
Just like the Duda man. It sounds like
that, I never knew that was the lyric. I didn't know. I found that out on mic. Like, I didn't know that till you said it. I never fucking thought about it. I never thought to look up the lyrics to Truckin'. Because why would you?
That's the only one that I can really remember. And I feel like I'd had it pointed out to me before. So it's one of those once you hear it, you can't unhear it. Yeah, this is fun. How do you feel about the Ballad of John and Yoko? Because, you know, obviously there's a lot of...
I always kind of liked it. And I think the thing I like the best about it is it's kind of John Lennon being like, I'm going to do a good version of what you do, Paul. I dig that part of it.
The single version, evidently there's more reverb. Which, thank God, that,
yeah,
maybe there's a reason that was successful, but,
I'm just trained by like years of listening to albums to loathe the radio, like remix or the radio version. You know, sometimes it's more noticeable than others, but this was a big thing for kind of indie-ish bands that were on major labels would still sometimes have this. Like there's a song on Summer Teeth that's like, it was produced by somebody else.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be the single. And I think it happened to a Flaming Lips song too.
The one that I think of is Pixies Dig for Fire. I like bought the single, the little, you know, three track single from CD Warehouse. And that was the one that I heard the most. So when I heard the album version, I was like, what the fuck is this?
The thing you get with that fucking Dig for Fire single is, ooh, you get the Pixies cover of Winterlong.
Oh, yeah, that is on there.
Favorite covers
yeah.
ever made. It's so good.
Winterlong. I'm gonna go listen to that after this. But. If things should ever
turn out wrong, and all the love we like, that's kind of why we picked it, because we want to do a kind of country record, and the original idea was to do that lit record, and it's unfucking listenable. I didn't think I couldn't find a lot of people who were like, no, it's good. So we didn't do the lit record. We did this because it was kind of country-ish. I still expected more kind of electric guitar noodling. I'm not sure why, but there's like none. Here's the point I want to end on. This doesn't sound live in the slightest. Like, this sounds like we all recorded at separate times in the driest room we could find and listened to each other in headphones. This doesn't sound like a band playing together at all. And that's like, I thought the whole fucking point.
That's the whole deal.
Like, that's all you're supposed to be good at.
I think you really picked up on that, and you know, there are points where that is more and less applicable, but definitely consistent throughout the record. It sounds, you know, pretty assembled. Grateful Dead. This is why we do the show. Sometimes we really like
and to be honest, we always knew we were going to make an episode. We're like, nah, they still suck. And this is one of them. Eric Clapton's another one. Like, hey, here's the thing. Like, the premise is all well and good. I'm going to be really mean to Eric Clapton, just because it's so fun. Like, why? It's super fun. If you haven't been really mean about Eric Clapton, you should.
He totally deserves it.
Everything sticks to him. Yeah. It's like every 6 months, you're like, should we take it easy on Eric Clapton? And he's like, Keep England White. And we're like, oh, never mind. fuck him.
Yes, that is the official position of the Tune Change podcast is fuck Eric Clapton.
Also, I ding ding ding. I kept my streak alive of Matt is trying to end the show. And I'm like, wait, and then I tell you an unrelated thing that now you have to figure out how to fit back into the flow.
Oh, that is okay. Because we're doing it for fun, and we hope, listener, wherever you are, we hope that you had fun with us. We hope that you have fun with the Grateful Dead. If you like to, if you don't like it, you can have fun. Listen to us not having fun with the Grateful Dead. Cause yeah, it wasn't one that I would necessarily, return to on the regular.
Oh, hell no. I'm not listening to this. I'm not listening to a lot of these. If I have anything to say about it ever again, like I gave it a good shake. And, 3-4 listens, Truckin's still my favorite song on the record. I don't really like Truckin'. I think we're done here. I've only got so much time.
I just turned 37. I am at the midpoint in my life. I can listen to,
I think I speak for both of us when I say, midpoint if we're lucky. Thanks. We've been Tune Changed.
So speaking of things that we're going to, perhaps not subject ourselves to next week. What about the first Fish record? No, I'm totally
Can I make a suggestion that is the opposite, I feel, of American Beauty?
Yes, I'm ready to take a hard left turn, really anywhere else.
Ray of light.
Yes.
Ray of light. Ray of light. Ray of light.
I love it.
We should do Ray of Light.
Okay. Well, you heard it there first, folks. Next time on Tune Change, Madonna, I believe it's 1997's Ray of Light. Gentle listener, wherever you might have found us, wherever you might be, we thank you for your listens and for your time. And until next time, don't forget
Ray
to listen
of
to music.
Light. Ray of light. Ray of light. Ray of light.
We should do Ray of Light.
you want to listen to some music you're not sure you'll like, go to directory.bandcamp.com. That's where I put music that I make, and if you like beeps and boops and occasional guitar chugs, you might like it. Directory.bandcamp.com. Who wants to hear a happy country song? I like it. I love it.
Oh, God.
I want some more of it.
Oh, my.
I tried so hard. I can't rather but
speaking of childhood sense memories, that's one of those that, like, you hear, like, 3.5 seconds, and then you just, the whole thing. I have a theory about 90s country songs being produced in just a sterile Nashville laboratory, being like, you know, optimized and titrated for just complete earworm
status. I think
status.
It started just to, you know, just to ring the bell. I think it started at 9/11. It was like, no, we're going to make these all in-house from now on. And before that is like, you know, there was a little bit of like, oh, there was the slow ones, and there was the, you know, there was the kind of like kind of classic kind of railroad kind of
train beat, yeah,
kind of vibe. And now it's just like everything is this mid-tempo kind of, oh, and you exist, and a whole lot of everything.
A whole lot of everything, indeed. Yeah,
that's the best improvisation I've ever done. I'm so glad it was captured.